Hi, this is Ryan, and I'm the producer of Techish. Abba and Michael are taking a breather this week, so this episode is going to be a bit of a greatest hits. This is all about self-care, looking after yourself as a founder, and looking after yourself as a person of colour in society in general. Also, exciting news, Techish live show coming in November, November 14th in fact. Tickets are dropping soon, so make sure you follow Abba Desi and Michael Behane for more news. All the links are in the description. Enjoy the episode.
Talk about an open letter that I read from someone that I met and someone that Abba Desi knows, a dude called Carl Martin. He was the founder of his own startup, which was essentially attempting to replace LinkedIn. I mean, we've all got like a love-hate relationship with LinkedIn. It's mainly hate. And I think he just saw it and was like, you know,
the LinkedIn killer.
Yeah, basically, he wanted to build something that was more inclusive, something that was more simpler, more streamlined. And he built an app, which I saw and I have used a few times, and it was pretty cool.
The app is called Ping.
Yeah, the app was called Ping.
I think. And then More Than We.
Yeah, he rebranded. Now, the open letter was basically him saying, I've been working on this for 2 years full time, and I'd raised some money, and I tried to raise some more money from investors. I took a lot of meetings in the States. He's London based, and it hasn't really worked out. He didn't get any follow through based on a number of factors, like maybe like lack of traction and whatnot, which he outlines in the article. And he talks about the downsides of being an entrepreneur, essentially. He talks about why he's decided to go back into employment while he works on this part-time.
Yeah.
Take a breather because his health was deteriorating.
Yes.
His social life was deteriorating. He had no money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I just thought it was a really refreshing look at what can go wrong. And I think sometimes we just big it up too much. And
definitely,
on the gray side, like,
everyone's trying to get in the game because they want to be a millionaire and they want to get rich. But what they don't forget is that if you actually just want to have a stable income and be a relatively high earner, you're better placed to just stay in the corporate world and rise up the corporate ladder. Like, probability-wise, honestly, that is true.
Mm.
And there's an overwhelming amount of data to prove that. So many people assume, because of the myths in the media and the things that we watch on TV and in films, that, oh my God, like this amazing story of the tech founder, you know, this 20-something, 30-something guy, almost always a guy, who, you know, just, you know, comes up with this great idea in his bedroom or his garage or like whatever, and suddenly he's just like rolling in it, you know. People like Evan Spiegel, you know, they're anomalies. They really, really are. Like, he's
outliers.
A very, very privileged guy from a very privileged background. And the risk is much lower for them. And, you know, you can't... For every Evan Spiegel who succeeded, by the way, there are also like 1,000 who haven't succeeded, but it doesn't matter because they're living off a trust fund.
Yeah.
And, you know, the majority of founders are broke. Like,
yeah.
I've said this Brian Chesky quote on the show before, but I just love it. You know, the difference between an unemployed person and an entrepreneur is a mindset.
Mm.
And it's true. And we all know that. Like, we've all bootstrapped before. Like, I've been there. You've been there. You know, you just can't do stuff that people with a job can do.
Yeah.
People are like, oh yeah, cool, let's just like go for dinner, go to the movies.
Nope.
And you can't do that. And I remember, you know, I had a really dry spell of sales with like Hustle Crew last summer. No one was buying any of my training. No one was booking anything. And one of my friends who moved away from London to New York had come back to visit. And he'd planned all this week of really fun stuff. And I was just like, I'm going to have to be so lame, like I just can't come for dinner tonight, because you know, dinner in London, 30-40 quid, then out for drinks another 40 quid, before you know it, you know, you're spending hundreds of pounds, and then you work that out against how much you're earning. And you know, the point that Carl makes in there, borrowing off friends, borrowing off family, okay, fine, for a month, maybe a year, you know, like you do it for a year, you do it for a year and a half, like that's when you really reset. Like, one of the biggest reasons why I decided to, you know, work at Product Hunt and AngelList, like, apart from it being an amazing company, was also because I just didn't want to bootstrap another year.
Mm.
I was like,
so
mental
this must
health.
Have, this must have really resonated with you then.
Oh my gosh, yeah. You know, it's really funny because, you know, Carl is a friend and we met. I actually knew of him. You know how it is in startups. You meet people on Twitter.
Yeah,
we never really met in real life. And we both were very fortunate to attend an incredible course, which I highly, highly recommend for every single human being in the world. It's called Design for Inclusion. And it's run by a London-based startup called Fearless Futures. So Hannah Naima McCloskey is this incredible British Algerian woman who's basically built an organization to tackle inequality and injustice from an intersectional lens. And she works with schools. She works with big corporates, banks, tech companies, etc. We go on this 4.5-day course, which is basically like, how do we design for inclusion? How do we build stuff which is more inclusive? And as entrepreneurs on the very similar journey, same age, you know, we bonded a lot on that because we were sharing a lot of the same struggles. And we talked about mental health a lot during that, because being an entrepreneur creates its own level of anxiety and stress, which, you know, we really don't talk about a lot. It's very lonely. Like, how many people do you know who are bootstrapping a business right now?
I know tons.
We do, yeah. But we've sought them out. You're like 3 years into this journey of doing right? Yeah. But when you first start out, did you know many?
Oh, no, not really. No, not at all.
So you kind of, you know, all of the friends that you, you know, who you still have in your life are like in a job and just in a more comfortable position, and very little things you never had to worry about. Like, oh yeah, cool, let's just go see this new film at the cinema. Suddenly you're like,
And you take that for granted when you're in work. Like, exactly. The smallest things that you would just casually spend £25 here, £30 here for dinner, whatever. And yeah, when you're bootstrapping, it's like, I can't go. And you get, it's lonely.
Yes.
It's a lonely road.
And you know, the mental health is so closely linked to the physical health. When I was bootstrapping, I remember some of my family came to visit this same summer, and they're like, whoa, you've lost so much weight. Are you okay? You're not eating enough. In my mind, I thought I was eating enough. Mm. But you know what stress does? Like, it makes you neglect yourself, and it makes you neglect your self-care. And it's really interesting because Carl speaks about how some of his, you know, physical ailments were also kind of just getting exacerbated.
Yeah, actually got disorders.
Through all the stress. Yeah, like skin conditions and all this kind of stuff. And I know, for me personally, the biggest thing that made me realize, wow, this life maybe isn't for me, at least not for now, was my increased social anxiety.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. So I'm like a relatively extroverted person. I'm always up for hanging out with people, chilling, like go to a networking event, go to whatever. In the first 6 months of Hustle Crew, I was still super pumped because, you know,
I remember meeting
I had a
you
little
there.
Bit of traction and everything was great. While I was in the incubator and encouraged to move towards this B2B model, after that pivot, I just never really quite got anywhere sticky, any kind of traction. And there was like such a slump for so many months that I actually stopped wanting to go to stuff, because at least in the beginning of the journey, you're kind of like, oh, you know, we're still finding our feet, but we've had a few wins. And then, you know, when you're at that point in your business plan where you're just not executing the forecast you made or like whatever, like you do start to get a bit sad and you do start to feel a bit like a failure. And I remember just not wanting to go to stuff because I just felt that people always wanted to ask me how I was doing. And can I also just say, can we talk about that? When you have a job, no one asks you, what are you earning? How are you going to survive? How are you going to get a mortgage? Suddenly I was an entrepreneur and like all my personal finances were other people's business.
That's true.
What's that about?
Yeah, I was going to say, I hate when people just say to you like, oh, how's business? Because you're forced to kind of give a canned answer, even if you're doing terribly. Oh yeah, we're doing all right. But yeah, if you had people around you that were like, how much money are you making? I would have just been like, just mind your business. Like,
mind your business.
Yeah, mind your business. Like, so people were really asking you those type of questions.
You will not believe it. I don't know if it's like a male-female thing or whatever. I remember I went to like a friend's wedding and I saw some colleagues, university friends I hadn't seen in years. And you know how it is, keeping up with the Joneses, everyone wants to know what everyone's up to.
And you went to LSE as well.
And I went to LSE, which
is so like, you can imagine, like, everyone's quite high-achieving, like,
yeah, like, and type A, like, I'm writing speeches for, like, Obama or, like, whatever, and you're just like, all right. But someone was just like, oh, I heard you're running your own business. You know that, like, passive-aggressive line of questioning. It's like, oh, I always wanted to run my own business, but I could just never find a way for the economics to make sense. And I was like, okay, good for you. And she was just like, I mean, London's so expensive, you're bootstrapping, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, well, you know.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah, like, I was just like, I don't really feel that I owe you. I literally haven't seen you in years, but you will be surprised how many people, and interestingly, often women who also were interested in entrepreneurship themselves, just like regard me as some kind of like mysterious thing, and they just, you know, wanted to use that to get
cliche phrase. You're kind of a role model in a sense of, you know, a woman founder going out doing her own thing. So it doesn't surprise me that other women would want to know like, how have you done it or how are you finding it? To be honest, just like so.
But that's the thing. That's extra pressure as well.
100%.
That's extra pressure that then goes on to the founder. So for example, like Carl, you know, I'm gonna go out and kill LinkedIn. Everyone knows you put yourself out there, and you know, then people expect you to fulfill that, and also people expect you to like always be on it. Like they want entrepreneurs, founders, gotta be 100%, always be pitching, always be selling, energy.
I feel so bad when I met him. I think he actually paid for coffee and tea now. If I knew how bad things were for him, I wouldn't have done that. This is terrible. It's not, I'm not even making a joke. Carl, if you listen to this, like I'm gonna get you back for that. Don't get twisted. Like, but such an informative and like eye-opening like letter and article, because we've all can resonate with
yes.
parts of it. I remember my experience before I was doing peopleofcolorintech.com. I had like an e-commerce startup and it was going sideways, so I had to go back to work. And I was just fresh out of uni, so I actually had to go back to my old retail job. So this wasn't even like I'm going back to a nice corporate job. This is like I'm going ground zero back again. And it was like cap in hand. I felt so embarrassed, and I would see people that had graduated a year before me and they were all, you know, working in finance, and they're like, oh, how are you doing? And they would see me in my uniform.
You'd like, be like, hey, man.
Oh, Lord. But it was character building. Don't get twisted. Like, yeah. I learned that you just have to stop giving an F, basically, what others think of you. And I also learned that you've got to really believe in what you're doing, because at the time, I didn't really believe in what I was doing, so it made it a harder pill to swallow. So whatever you're building, whether it's Hustle Crew or what Carl was working on, if you don't really believe, like, completely and utterly in what you're doing, when this kind of stuff happens, you're just going to throw in a towel, because you should throw in a towel, because it's too hard. Like, it doesn't logically, like, I can't explain why anybody should really do this, because you're not likely to get rich. Let's keep it 100. Yeah, you're going to struggle for a long time. There's much quicker ways of getting rich, and not quicker ways, much more stable ways of getting rich. Yeah. If
healthier, more sustainable ways,
you know, get a 6-figure salary if you can, and just put away whatever you're saving, and eventually you'll have a lot of money.
I was recently asked at an event that I did. I basically said, I was talking about negotiation and some tactics you can use. And I was telling people that they should find accountability partners within their social network to sort of hold them accountable to the goal, whether that's asking for a pay rise, moving new jobs or whatever. Someone in the audience said to me, you know, what do you do if your friends aren't really into that kind of stuff? They're not like that. Maybe they're not as ambitious as you. So really it just became a question of like, you know, how can you switch up your social circle?
Right.
So you're around the right people that sort of support your ambition, whether that's, you know, succeeding as a founder, succeeding within the tech world.
Right.
Is this something you've heard about before, or like you've experienced or seen, observed?
I mean, I think everybody knows that phrase of, you know, you're the average of the five people that you hang around with. And there is a lot of truth to that statement. Pardon me. And I think someone in that position, definitely you've got to, you know, you've got to do the hard work of getting out of your house and going to meetups and just surrounding yourself with ambitious people. Find them. Where are they? Where are the people that are interested in what you're interested in? And just make sure that you're in their proximity, literally. I've always struggled with, you know, changing up your social circle. Like, I don't necessarily agree with completely changing it, because I think different people have different functions in your life, and you vice versa. Like, I have friends that are super ambitious that I've grown up with, and I have friends that, you know, stay at home and play video games all day.
Yeah.
And I haven't completely...
That's me, by the way.
You're right. I haven't cut those people off. Like, I know some people are a lot more ruthless than, like, I cut those people off, but sometimes I want to just play video games for like an hour and just be a knucklehead. Like, why not, kind of thing? But you've got to be careful not to let those people have any influence in your life. This sounds really ruthless, but I'm keeping it 100 now. But if you've got, let's say, all of your friends are like that, that's difficult. That's when you've got to make a conscious effort to go out, meet those people, engage with the new people, go to meetups, go to, you know, networking events, as cliche as it sounds. Even join online communities.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our interactions now with our friends, let's keep it real, it's a WhatsApp group. It's an IG group now. Like, and sometimes you need to be in a lot of those kind of super positive, super ambitious ones, just so that your mental energy is filled with positivity, as cliche as this all sounds.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's about striking the balance. But I do still, like, to your point, yes, you know, strike the balance. One of the things I love about, like, Rihanna, whenever I'm, like, on her Instagram...
Bad girl Riri. Riri. Cool, yeah.
But, like, she's still, like, friends with all of her friends, like, from Barbados, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think I can't even imagine what it must be like to go from, like, you know, normal life to be plucked from obscurity to then being, you know, one of the most recognizable faces on a planet of like
nuts.
10 billion people.
Yeah, that's nuts.
I can't imagine what that must be like. So, of course, there's value in staying connected to your roots. We've talked about Ye in the past and how, like, he got too far gone.
That's what happened.
So, yeah, it's like, right, you got to stay connected to your roots. However, at the same time, there are some connections which are toxic. And I think as we grow older, we start to recognize those ones which maybe are a net loss overall when we think of all the interactions. And I'd say if you just wish that there were more ambitious people in your phone book that you could call upon when you're trying to work through a problem or whatever, then you should probably spend a bit more time, like, online or in networking events. And don't worry about, oh, I'm not extroverted, I'm not introverted. I did a workshop yesterday and someone said, you know, I want to build my network, but I'm an introvert. And I said, you know, I consider myself an ambivert. It's like, there are times when I'm happy to be extroverted, but there are also times when I have serious social anxiety or I just get very drained by people.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what I would say is put yourself out there. Talk in the open about what you're working on, about what you aspire to, what your ambitions are. Write about them on Medium, share them on Twitter or Instagram, whatever social media platform you like. You can start your own blog if that's what you would prefer. But just start telling your story so that people who are interested in that story and, you know, also out there trying to strive for things can connect with you. So, a BuzzFeed article went viral, making waves across the internet, describing millennials as the burnout generation. Mm. It opens with expressing the challenges of completing like seemingly trivial tasks, like filling out voter registration forms, etc.
Right.
Because we're always burdened by what feels like a never-ending to-do list while still lacking true financial security as a result of growing up in the recession and just generally living in quite economic and politically uncertain times, the erosion of public services, etc. So we don't necessarily have that nest that our parents did and previous generations did. I think the reason why it resonated with so many people was because a lot of the times, you know, millennials, and, you know, by millennials, I mean, you know, people who roughly aged like, what, 22 to like 37, 38, something
right.
like that.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Millennials so are getting old, boy.
Yeah, I know. I'm one of them.
You're millennials.
Aging. But, you know, this idea of like people born in this era, like going through the same moments in history together, entering adulthood together, have never really been able to, in a way, kind of like define their experience and define their struggle. Like there are certain phrases that have been coined for this generation, like quarter life crisis and stuff like that. But it was the first time someone kind of did like a more sociological examination of it, which I thought was really interesting. So the poet Tiana Clark, a Black American woman, wrote her own response to this, which was also published on BuzzFeed. And it was a really, really fascinating response in the sense that she says that what is described in that article written by a white woman is a sense of tiredness that Black Americans have felt for generations and literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, beginning with the trauma of arriving on a slave ship and, you know, entering into the present day where they are still regarded as second class citizens by the society that their, you know, ancestors and forefathers died
and built.
To build.
Yeah.
So I think what I loved about that response is the reminder that one must always be like intersectional in how they approach any examination of society. And remember that you will never be able to truly empathize with the experiences of someone of another identity because you have not experienced like the structures of society and structural oppression in the way that they have. You might have read about it
completely,
but you just don't know. So if you haven't read Tiana's article, please do read both of them. They're both amazing. Share them with your friends, have a debate, have a discussion. These are issues which are affecting us, and unless we name them, we can't find a way to like understand them and overcome them and mitigate against them.
What do you think could be done? We all know how millennials have been, you know, stuck with an economy where there's no real like rising wages. You can't really get on a property ladder. And obviously if you're Black, it's compounded by other things where, you know, you're afraid of the police or, you know, even I had an experience where I was overseas. I was in Wales. I was going to say overseas, but it kind of was like I was overseas. Like, so anyways, I'm going into a store now and I'm like, okay, let me like take off my hood because I don't want them to get scared.
Yeah,
and like that kind of mental baggage of just having to constantly worry about how you're perceived, like even and I can't imagine what it's like to not have that fear, not even that, not fear, but not to have that mental circuitry of just like how am I being perceived right now?
Oh, of course,
because I don't want to come across as like thing. And sometimes you put that inflection in your voice where you're like, "Hey, so that people don't get scared."
This is exactly what the article talked about.
That's compounding on top of the economic situation. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously, not every community can't go to their parents and just be like, "Yo, I want to buy a house. Can you give me X, Y, and Z?" And if that upwardly mobile white generation or demographic is suffering,
it's even worse.
It's quadruply compounded.
But this is the point that Tiana makes where she's saying that, you know, if that's how you feel as like a more privileged group of society, how do you think it is for us, you know, when we are disproportionately at the behest of all these institutions and it's harder for us to get a loan and it's harder for us to get a job and like, you know, we know that bias is real, conscious, unconscious, whatever, it's there. Look at the numbers. we're not rising, we're not represented.
Right.
So I think, oh, so what's the solution? Like, well, one, obviously awareness, please let's have a conversation. Let's talk about it. Sometimes people are wondering, you know, why it is that there aren't that many Black people in their team. Well, have you created an environment in which Black people can thrive? Have you taken the care to educate yourselves on, you know, where Black people are in terms of like recruiting them or like what they want in terms of like their values? Have you even like created compensation packages that suit the reality of being a Black person? These are the questions you need to be asking yourselves in your teams and in your organizations, and acknowledging that the experiences of, you know, one person isn't necessarily the experiences of another, especially if they're of different races. And then I think the second thing, which Tiana highlights in a personal like essay, so writing about her own experiences that was published in Lenny.com, she said that for her, it's just about investing in like her own personal well-being and self-care. Because what often happens is, speaking as a Black woman, you're doing a lot of work and you're often doing the work of others and you don't give yourself permission to rest.
Right.
Right. So she says how she is always afraid to ask for what she wants because asking for what she wants will be interpreted as emotional, aggressive.
That angry Black woman trope, essentially.
Because she is a Black woman. You know, if she if she wasn't a Black woman, then people would be like, oh, great, assertive. She's assertive. She's interesting.
Yeah.
So she says, you know, the reality of that perception of others is that you just like work yourself to the ground. You never have that space to take a break. You're worried if you do take a break, you're going to be seen as lazy and now you're going to get fired.
Yeah.
So she says that she just invests in herself. So if any part of this story resonates with you, then just make sure you are giving yourself space. Another thing that I think is so important, if I could just go back in time and tell myself, it's this. Don't sweat the small stuff.
Mm.
The perspective that you get the longer you've done entrepreneurship is so powerful. Mm. It's so valuable. You get better at prioritizing. You get better at, I'm not saying I'm perfect, by the way, but I do feel that I've gotten a lot better at understanding like what I should actually give headspace and energy to and what is something that like just get it done or just defer it to later.
Yeah.
I meet so many founders that are like obsessing over every little thing. And like, don't get me wrong, it's important to put attention in the details and it's important to like be deliberate in everything that you do. But if you put like 100% energy analysis and everything into every single action, you're going to burn out.
I think me personally, one thing I always struggle with is ego. And this is really me opening up because I resist sometimes working with people. I resist sometimes, you know, in fact, actually part of the reasons why I became an entrepreneur was because, this sounds so petty, but I got shushed in a meeting once. We were having a meeting and the boss was like, shh. I was just like, oh, that's it, I'm leaving. That's it, I'm out of here. I was like, that's it, I'm out of here. Like, and
that is so annoying though.
That is very annoying. We don't get twisted, but that's not leave your job annoying. Some people, not everyone's going to often leave their job and be like, that's it. Like, I'm going to go off and start my company and screw these guys and whatever. Like, and if I asked the person who did it, they wouldn't even remember it.
Mm.
That's the thing, right? I had imbued that with some giant narrative about my career and I just took it in the way. I was like, yeah, that's it, I'm off. And sometimes, yeah, like, you can miss out on great opportunities also, though, if you let your ego get in the way. Like, I've applied for certain things and, like, I didn't get in the first time. Certain fellowships, certain things, and I was like, forget these guys, don't they know who I am? That's the internal battle I have. And then I'm like, no, calm down, this should still work out for you, this should still be great, it could still be a win-win. As much as I hate the phrase win-win, it could still be a win-win. Like, apply anyway. And like, you know, emailing somebody and getting ignored, emailing a potential investor and getting ignored, emailing a potential client and getting ignored, like those type of things actually used to grate me a lot. I used to get really down and be like, oh man, but like, don't they know what we could do and blah 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 blah. And it's like, no, it's not personal.
Yeah.
You know who I learned from? You're gonna laugh.
Who?
DJ Khaled.
Nice.
I saw an interview with DJ Khaled because he was notorious for getting features.
Yeah.
People were like, how have you got Jay-Z on your track? Like, you're just a DJ. Like, if you ask 90% of people, what does DJ Khaled do? Most of them would be like, I don't have a clue. Like, he's the guy that shouts in front of the record.
Yeah.
But I was a fan of him some years ago because what he's the best at is getting features, and he is just relentless with asking. He is relentless, just being like, he doesn't care about his ego. He'll be like, Jay, do you want to come on this track? He'll be getting ignored for 4 years. Then eventually he'll get to the level where he's successful enough where Jay-Z will look at him and be like, all right, I'm ready. You're at the right level now. And I learned a lot from that because I was like, yeah, like, don't take it personal.
Bide your time.
Bide your time. Don't take it personal.
Hey guys, Ryan again. Hope you really enjoyed that episode and got a lot out of it. Remember to join in on the conversation as #techish. Review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you hear this. 5 stars, please. And remember, we've got the live show. So that's Techish Live Show, November 14th in London. Tickets are dropping soon. Follow Abadesi and Michael Behane. Check the show notes for more. Peace.